This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Jonas Schaefer covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. He's an IA Hall of Famer, and he joins us now courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Jonas, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So what did you take away from last night? Obviously, we've talked a lot about pass rush, what the Eagles were able to do rushing Patrick Mahomes, but anything that the Ravens may have seen that they might want to do heading into this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I thought back to honestly, what Nick Sirianni said after they came to Baltimore and whipped up on the Ravens was, you know, all the talk was about how the Ravens had the advantage in the run game, how, you know, this was a run defense that was particularly well suited to stop Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts. And the Ravens got dominated up front. And Sirianni said afterwards, you know, we felt like they had to match our level of physicality. And I think we saw that play out again last night, where, you know, you have this Eagles team, Chiefs team that, you know, has been built through the trenches in a lot of ways. You know, they obviously came to Baltimore last year and kind of bullied the Ravens in the AFC Championship game. You thought that they would be able to raise their level of play to match what Philadelphia has up front. And, you know, you could argue that that's what they did in the run game, but ultimately, the Eagles just had way too much talent up front on offense and defense. And, you know, frankly, it didn't matter who their skill position talents were. And they're obviously exceptional and, you know, Pro Bowl worthy at a bunch of spots. But the Eagles won that game in the trenches, just like they, you know, came to Baltimore in whenever that was, October, November, and won that game in the trenches. So I know that's always been the MO for how Eric DaCosta wants to build this team. That's what John Harbaugh values, certainly, in his, you know, close to two decades of being in Baltimore. But I think it really just hammered home how important that could be in, you know, on the sport's biggest stage.
Winning in the trenches defensively can lead to takeaways. And Jonas, you tweeted earlier today about the Ravens' lack of takeaways in the playoffs with Lamar Jackson. Just two takeaways in games that he started, where the Eagles had three last night alone. What do you make of that? Because 2023, they forced the most turnovers in football and forced none that postseason.
Yeah, I think it's just a weird, you know, you just talk it up, the variance and randomness of playoff football. I mean, you know, on the two charts that I tweeted out, like, the Ravens were in the top right quadrant along with the Pittsburgh Steelers. When you look at the playoff chart, and it's the Ravens and the Steelers at the bottom left, meaning that they're at the worst. So you obviously put some of the blame on Lamar for just the turnover margin in general. It's not just the defense that hasn't held up its end of the bargain. I mean, I think you could argue that the offense has been more to blame for all the turnover stuff, because while the Ravens defense hasn't really, you know, done a good job of getting takeaways, they've done a pretty good job overall in the Lamar era of just, you know, limiting big plays, of limiting touchdowns. They usually keep opponents to, you know, within 20 points or around there. You know, and obviously the big failure of that game against Buffalo was just how ill-prepared that defense looked. But you think that if they just play more and more playoff games, eventually they'll kind of come back to the norm. But, you know, taking the ball away is a skill on the Ravens. I think I've only like three forced fumbles in that seven-game span with Lamar since he became a full-time starter, and that's not good enough. You got to be around the ball more. You got to get more hands on the ball, or otherwise you're just not going to create the kind of luck that you need to win, you know, some of these 50-50 games.
11 draft picks, more comp picks than Bone can count. Do these guys need to at some point be more ambitious with how they deploy this and take, especially if you, like, they're in the mix every year? Obviously, we look at the roster every year and say it's pretty damn good. It's going to give them a chance. And now, you know, for whatever, 12 years running, it hasn't been quite good enough. And this year, they were remarkably healthy, and it wasn't quite good enough. At some point, do you need to take quantity and turn it into quality? Do you need to be more willing to move up a draft board in the first couple of rounds of a draft, or be willing to package high-end picks to try to get a player to put you over the top?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm, if you were to say, like, Eric DaCosta were the GM in Baltimore for the next decade and, like, asked me to set the lines at, for, like, the over-under for the number of times that he'll trade up in the first round over that next decade, I would probably say, like, 0.5 or 1.5. Yeah. I mean, assume that Lamar is the quarterback for that duration. I think that the only time that the Ravens would move up would be for a quarterback and someone who could, you know, change the direction of this franchise. But listen, I think with the number, with the amount of draft capital that they have in, you know, early day three, late day two, and just the wealth of talent that could be available, like early round two, I don't think it would surprise me at all. It's like, you know, that they take a tackle in that first round, and, you know, maybe that the Boston College edge rusher who's been so productive is sitting there still at, like, you know, pick 40, and the Ravens don't think he'll make it back to the, you know, late 50s. And they decide that, like, this is the guy that we need to help take this defense up another level. You know, obviously they haven't really done a good job of finding pass rush help on day two. I know it's a small sample size, but I think there's enough kind of first round, fringe first round talents in this year's draft that you could really find good value early in that second round. Maybe that compels the Ravens to move up a spot, move up a couple spots and go get that guy. I think you probably do have, with as many people as they drafted last year and years prior, you probably are reaching this critical mass of, we can't keep everyone that we draft, and we're going to have to make some tough decisions about just kind of, you know, arbitrage and how realistic it is to have all 11 players in this draft class make the team in year one. And if it's pretty unlikely, then I think you probably have to, you're better off moving up and trying to find better value there. But, you know, the Ravens employ tons of very well-paid, well-educated people who do the analytics on this, and I'm sure we'll be kind of crunching those numbers from now until late April.
We're talking with Jonas Schaefer, Inside Access here on The Fan. Jonas, what about, like, I know they don't like to do this, but maybe spending on a pass rusher. We saw a guy last night, Josh Sweat. Now, he could go back to Philly, but, like, they need a dude. They don't have a dude right now, unless you think that dude is Kyle Van Noy.
Yeah, or some combination of Adisa Isaac and Adafi Owe, but yeah. I'm with you.
Ajabo.
I guess we're kind of getting to the end of that story.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think it's just, you know, whenever people throw out these big names for these free agents or for these trade targets, I'm like, well, are you going to take away the money that you would need to potentially pay Ronnie Stanley or to potentially pay, you know, Kyle Hamilton or Tyler Linderbaum or whoever it's going to be? I mean, like, they don't have a whole lot of money. And even that, this, you know, the salary cap space, that all those figures that get tossed around for the next couple of months is misleading, because you need money to pay your draft class. You need money to, you know, have your kind of in-season rainy day fund. You need money for practice squad and all these kinds of things. So I think it's a very, very tight situation that the Ravens are dealing with, even more so because I think, if you'd ask me in, like, late April whether I expected Derrick Henry to be on the team in 2025, I probably would have said no. I said it would probably would have been a one-year rental, even though they paid him for a two-year deal. So, you know, that's a good problem to have, you know, having paid Derrick Henry all that money and still thinking you can get even more value out of him in 2025. But listen, I mean, I think there are very, very few players that the Ravens are going to be willing to spend top dollar in that free agency market just because of how they kind of oriented that roster and where their priorities are going to be for the long term. I mean, that kind of goes back to what Jason was just asking about, like you have to have some money assigned for these guys who've proven themselves to be dudes. Like you're not going to want to let Kyle Hamilton go, certainly for his free agency, or even get, you know, even another year into his contract, because the market for safeties is inevitably going to jump, but the market for centers is inevitably going to jump. And I think there's a lesson to be learned from what the Eagles have done. It's as soon as you get these dudes in the building, you know, give them top of the market deals, because if they continue to be dudes, then the value that you get from them will kind of pay for itself.
Jonah Schaefer covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. The offseason, it's always something, so don't take any long naps, because something's going to bound to be happening every week. But, Jonas, we appreciate your time, man. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we hit the hot corner and the Orioles, the pitchers and catchers reporting this week. What could a lineup against right-handed pitching look like this year? We'll give it our best shot next year.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep. Graybar does that.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan.
You know, you want to see other guys step up that are have the ability to hit for some more power. Also, you had Tyler O'Neill, who had a nice power year the last few years. You know, you get guys like Kierstad are going to get more of an opportunity to have huge power. So I think we'll supplement it in other ways.
That's Brandon Hyde, manager of the Baltimore Orioles, talking at the Birdland Caravan, and he's talking about what they're going to do to replace Anthony Santander. So let's take a look at that. And against a right-handed pitcher, and this team is loaded with young left-handed hitters, but what could a lineup look like against a right-handed pitcher?
I got to be honest, like, I can't get Tyler O'Neill in this lineup.
No, me either.
So that was sort of the whole point of this exercise. Like, yeah. I tried, but, you know, homie had a 290 on base against right-handed pitching last year. He slugged only .403 and had a .693 OPS. Like, and he's not plus in the outfield anymore. So he's on the bench, and I got news for you. There's way more right-handed starters in Major League Baseball than lefties. This is what I went with. They won't do it, but this is what I did. I went Mullins leading off, Gunner, Adley. So you got three lefties. Westy from the right side at four. I've got O'Hearn batting fifth in right field. I've got Mountcastle at first base because I think you need to have your best first baseman in there. And if I'm going to have a right-handed bat, I'll take his over O'Neill because I trust him at first base. And last time I checked, first base has to do a lot of business. And none of these guys in the infield are necessarily great throwers of the baseball. So I got Mountie from the right side at six. I had Heston at seven because I like the power potential there, and I've got Heston DHing. And then I like the idea of Calzer at eight and Jackson Holliday at nine. They won't do it, but seven through three would all be lefties. That would be a gauntlet of lefties for the righty. Like, turning over the order wouldn't necessarily be all that much fun. I think you take all the pressure off Jackson, batting him ninth. And in this lineup, eight, nine, one, and two can all run.
Bone?
I don't see them doing that.
Neither do I, but that's my lineup.
I sort of put it to how I thought that they would. Gunner leading off, Adley second. I put Westberg third, batting third. O'Hearn batting cleanup as DH. I did Heston five, Mountcastle six.
And you got Heston and Wright.
Yes.
O'Hearn or him, whatever.
Calzer, Cedric, and Jackson, six through nine, or seven through nine.
See, so I had it similar, though. I had Calzer, like flip Calzer and Kerstad.
Okay.
So I had Calzer a little higher, but yeah, basically, I had Mullins sixth because I just don't believe they're going to move him up in the lineup that far. But I see where Jason's going
And people are going to get hurt, and there'll be attrition, and guys will get days off. But I find it interesting that they put, $16.5 million in a guy none of us have in this lineup. They crowed about their backup catcher who's got right-handed power, not in this lineup. And they just added Ramon Laureano, right? So that's now $20 million in right-handed hitting corner outfield, not in this lineup. And Santander is making basically $13.5 a year, and he brings it from both sides of the plate, and they wanted nothing to do with their hero. I find that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to find a spot for him, too, but who are you putting him ahead of in the outfield? You can't. You're not going to DH him with those numbers as bad as they are against right-handed pitching. He's got no spot at the end against right-handed pitching.
Have these guys given out, and it's all one-year deals and no multi-year deals, so they haven't given out any deferred money yet, have they?
How are you going to defer a one-year salary?
Yeah, Santander's got deferred money.
After year one, what is the point? What are you deferring?
Yeah, there's nothing
to
defer.
Still paying Chris Davis. That's not them.
Of course. That's not them. Yeah, so Santander's got deferred. But they might want to start dabbling in the deferred money market. But yeah, I can't put Tyler O'Neill in this lineup. Not against.
I mean, they might because they're trying to prove a point.
Well, yeah, he's going to play against.
And like, if you want to tell me, well, you know, what's the sample size on those splits? Dude had 317 plate appearances against right-handed pitch. The Red Sox gave him a really good run. And he could, even at Fenway Park, he couldn't hit right-handed pitching. So
he's going to play against some righties.
Yes,
but he is. Your optimal
preferred lineup. Shouldn't be in it.
Michael Elias has already came out on record saying that Kerstad's going to be playing a lot more because of bringing in Tyler O'Neill. It's going to be a platoon with those two.
It's just interesting how they spent their money, what little they spent.
Yeah. They do make interesting decisions. Maybe Ramon Laureano will be in the optimal lineup by June.
Again, these things have a way of working themselves out. But there's a lot of, they're counting on a lot of kids.
We've been begging them to not do that for how long? 2 years? Since the rebuild, as far as we're concerned, has been over. It's like you need to get some veteran influence, and their reaction to that is more kids.
And everybody in this lineup who's not a kid is on their last legs here.
Yep.
Mullins in his walk year, O'Hearn in his walk year, Mountie 1 year left beyond this year.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's how they built their team.
Yeah. Hey, maybe it works. Coming up next, tell you what worked yesterday. Terps. Derek Queen was an absolute monster. They split their two games last week. They dropped to 25 in the polls. Chris Nockey, part of our coverage, our Maryland Sports Radio Network call of Maryland basketball. We'll get his thoughts on yesterday, the week that was, and the week ahead. Chris joins us next here on The Fan. Terps split their week of games this past week, losing at Ohio State, but beating Rutgers yesterday at home, 90-81. They take on Nebraska at Nebraska this Thursday. And joining us now to talk some Terps basketball, part of the radio coverage. He's on the call with Johnny Holiday and Walt Williams. He joins us courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline.
He got the Tim Barbalace bump yesterday.
Yes, he was there engineering. It's Chris Nockey. And Chris, thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate your time. I know people really don't care about this, but I will ask it on the outside. Are you surprised they dropped seven spots after splitting last week?
Yeah, I am a little bit. But, you know, it's a pretty fluid situation, really. You look at all the teams and there's, you know, after seeing them all, and maybe they just all blur together for me, Ken. But yeah. There's not much difference between 10 and 25, really. As I said, it's a fluid situation. And I don't get too vexed over that stuff. It's nice that they're still ranked. And, you know, if you take care of business this week, you'll be ranked again next week.
A lot of different, I guess, ways to maybe look at this game. But what kind of shocked me, well, it shouldn't shock me anymore, but it would shock me in context of Maryland basketball in recent years. Juju doesn't see that much of the court. They miss 12 foul shots. They only make 10 three-pointers, which is a decent number, but not anything extreme. They have long stretches of the start of both halves where it looks like they're totally disjointed offensively. They scored 90 points and could have had 100.
I made a point yesterday, Jason. First of all, the only person that might have had a better game than Derek Queen was Tim Barbalace.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Got a lot of TV time.
Thank you, Chris.
He was a monster. Absolute monster.
Nice.
But, I made the point, actually, right before halftime that they were 0 for 8 or 0 for 9 to start the game, right? And they still dropped half a 100 in the first half. I think it was 49-38, something like that at the break. And to your point about the number of three-pointers, sometimes I'm not sure it's the number as much as it is the timing. Mm-hmm. Because they hit a lot of directional threes, it feels like. And to me, that's, you know, they just carry a little bit more weight. You know, anybody can shoot and make a bunch of threes in a 20-point game. But in a possession game, and I really thought that was a possession game yesterday. I didn't feel comfortable with it until the last 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the timing of those threes is something that, you know, you have to take into consideration.
Chris, Derek Queen was a monster in front of all of those NBA scouts yesterday at the Xfinity Center. 29 points, 15 rebounds. But the 5 assists, I continue to be amazed by his vision as a freshman big man.
Well, and that's what all those 27 scouts are amazed by as well. You know, I think they all recognize that the efforts have come and gone a little bit this year. And I'm going to give Derek Queen credit to he's smart enough to know that there were almost 30 scouts in that building yesterday, and he showed up, you know, and I think they recognize that, you know, he's a young kid, and sometimes the sum of his game, as I said, wanes a little bit, and then it's great. I just think that the feel that he has for the game is something that you can't really teach. Either you got it or you don't, and particularly for a guy that size, and that's what makes him special. The passes that he threw yesterday, I think he was credited with 5 assists, probably had another 4 or 5 hockey assists, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, he sees the game differently than most big guys do.
We're talking with Chris Nockey. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. Chris, let's go back to Ohio State. In your mind, what went wrong?
No, no.
They're up 17, Chris, and then all of a sudden it goes awry.
Yeah, but, you know, it was 17, and where it went awry, I thought, the last 4 minutes of the first half, you're up comfortably, and then you repeatedly fouled them, put them on the line. They weren't making any field goals. Now, all of a sudden, they're burying free throws. That game is 9 points at the halftime instead of 15 or 17, and it just feels completely different. And when you let a team, a Power 5 team, up off the mat, you're going to pay for it. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why I think, too, you know, people in the building had a little different, they were a little nervous yesterday when all that happened, you know, when Rutgers was playing well and coming back a little bit. And I think they saw that it was a repeat of the Ohio State game. There's just a big difference playing that game at home as opposed to, you know, being on the road where the other team's crowd gets into it. Ohio State had one guy just kind of steal it. He was fantastic, Bruce Thornton. He was the best player on the court all night long. And Terps just could not find any sort of remedy. That is a really disappointing loss. And I think the way you look at these things, guys, is, you know, after the Washington loss, I remember talking to one of the Maryland assistants thinking, and we were saying, well, for that loss, you have to make that up somewhere. You have to figure out a way or a place where people don't expect you're going to win and get that game. Well, Maryland wins at Indiana and at Illinois, so you figure, okay, we got that Washington game back. And this feels like the same thing to me. You got to make up for this by beating somebody that, you know, or in a tough situation or somewhere that you just, you know, people didn't expect you to do it. So, you know, you do get a chance to play again. That's the beauty of this sport, beauty of this game.
Chris, prior to these past two games, it seemed like Kevin Willard was really leaning heavily into his starting lineup. But the Ohio State game and yesterday, we've seen a lot of early substitutions. Malachi Palmer's back in the mix. Geronimo, Jay Young's getting some run. What have you thought of these early substitutions by Willard over these past two games?
Oh, I like him. I think that more often than not, he goes with that Iron Five approach, doesn't do much subbing after halftime. You know, I think generally speaking, you're going to see him go with mostly the starters in the second half. But one of the things that's interesting to me is I thought he tipped his hand a little bit after the game. He talked about, you know, trying to figure out who's going to get in there in those minutes, whether it's Geronimo or Agapare, and that, you know, that next big man in. And I think he's just going to go for the hot hand in that situation. I do think that Malachi Palmer is ultimately going to get more and more playing time. I thought he was really great when I watched him in practice before the season. You know, his only crime is that he's a freshman playing against a bunch of established guards. But I think he's going to get more and more time as we approach the tournament.
Nebraska certainly seems to have righted their ship since they put a scare into the Terps here. I kind of feel like it's time for Gillespie to kind of take this thing back over. Obviously, he was under the weather. We come to find out at Ohio State, you know, yesterday he didn't really, you know, didn't really have to penetrate a whole lot. I kind of feel like if Maryland's going to go win this thing on Thursday night, that maybe he's a little bit more dominant in terms of looking for his shot, either from distance or driving.
Yeah, I think, and he's got a good matchup. You know, I think it'll probably be left to Rodney Rice, I would think, to play against Bryce Williams, who's had a really good year for Nebraska. And Gillespie's had had a very good year for the Terps. But I would agree. I think that's a real position of advantage for Maryland in this game, and I expect that he'll play really well. I think this team is feeling very well, very good about themselves right now. They've come a long way. They continue to get better. You know, and in spite of a pickup like Ohio State, there were some really brilliant minutes of basketball in that game, particularly at the start of it. They just didn't sustain it.
Chris, the most important question, does your engineer usually get as much TV time as Tim got yesterday? Was that something he insisted upon? Was there a writer there that he insisted to be on television as much as he was?
Well, he also asked for just green M&Ms.
That sounds like him.
Fiji water.
But honestly, if he had known that he was going to be on TV that much, he would have worn something other than that Twisted Sister T-shirt that he was wearing.
We're not going to take it.
See what he wears around here.
Yeah,
Chris, that's a step up. He was classing it up with that red hoodie. Let me tell you. Yeah.
That's usually his Wednesday wear. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he's good luck at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, want to know?
Well, he's invited. He's clearly invited back.
Thank you,
sure.
Chris.
Before we let you go, I guess let's just look at the road ahead. Obviously, Nebraska, and then you got home in Iowa and home in USC. They have the opportunity. They take care of their own business to make some hay here.
Yeah, you get three straight home games after this game. This would be a really nice springboard into those three home games. You know, anytime you have home games, particularly at Xfinity with the crowd, the way the crowd's been showing up, you know, you they're all winnable, of course, and you feel good about your chances going into them. Like I said, it's great to look ahead and know that you're going to be sleeping in your own bed for a couple of weeks, but it would really be a nice springboard to get this in Lincoln on Thursday night.
Chris Nocke, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
All right, boys. Thank you.
Coming up next, we get back to the Ravens, and their offense was historic this year. Do we expect them to just run it back? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
Well, I think, Vinny, you know, our goal is to always have the best line that we can have, offensive line. We made a tough call last year to go younger and bring in and have some younger guys play, and we knew we'd have a few growing pains. I think we had a few, but looking back on it, I think it was absolutely the right thing to do, and we saw our guys improve and get better and really mesh as a unit and gel. You know, we are aware that we have some, you know, guys that contracts are up. We'll look at that and certainly have some discussions with players, and we'll look at potentially bringing back our guys. We'll look at the draft. We'll look at free agency. We'll overturn every rock to find as many good offensive linemen as we can.
That was Eric DaCosta at the end of the year press conference talking about, you know, what this thing could look like in the offensive line. And could the Ravens just run it back on offense? They were historically great this year offensively, both passing and rushing. But I guess, Jason, it starts with Ronnie Stanley, and they got a decision to make with Ronnie Stanley.
I mean, outside of that, I think they are running it back. Yeah. And I don't have a problem with them running it back. And I think that they need to try to build a Super Bowl caliber defense to go with a Super Bowl caliber offense. And I think it stands to reason with so many of their players on offense still so young and very much in their prime in year three with Monk. I think, you know, you secured Lamar. You want to start playing with his contract. You certainly can and should for cap purposes, because you should be opening up more money for Silent Steve to spend on this product to try to put it over the top. He's got that beautiful, right? This press box is gone. He's got his beautiful beer hall, the Black Wing, the Black Lung, the $600 million.
I think it's Black Wing.
Whatever.
Not Black Lung.
I call it Black Lung.
Black Lung's bad. Yeah. Black Wing, good.
Well, it's time to make a concerted effort to try to put your team over the top. So I think offensively, they're in a good place. You take Ronnie Stanley's money. If they want to move that to the defense, I think you can do that. And Rosengarten goes to left tackle. I think, you know, Andrews, if they were to trade him, we're all, I think, okay with that. If they want to kick the can with him, pay him another $11 million for 1 year, you could do that too. But, yeah, I think they are basically set there. You bring Ricard back for his 3.5, whatever he's going to get. And the questions for me are all defensive. I believe they have an offense that's now showed you they can put up the 27, 28 in the playoffs like they do in the regular season. Lamar has shaken some of that stuff that was hanging over him. I think the offense is worthy of being the last team standing. I think the defense established a modicum of above average performance. I think when you factor in how poor the teams they played down the stretch were, it made them look better than they were. But they don't have, for me, the kind of playmakers you need to be one of the few teams that break through and beat the Chiefs. And so, yeah, I think you run it back on offense and you use some of those savings to supplement the defense. That's part of the reason why I'm totally on board with the Andrews trade. You want to take $20 million where you've been playing Ronnie Stanley and $11 million that you've been paying, you know, that you're set to pay Andrews, and you want to kick that to the other side for a pass rusher, go and do it.
Well, those are the only two big internal decisions for Eric DaCosta in terms of free agency and cap purposes is what do you do with Ronnie Stanley? What do you do with Mark Andrews? And like you said, I think we all think that they're going to move on from Stanley, move Rosengarten in, but you got to make sure you get it right at the tackle position, because we did just see the Eagles eviscerate the Kansas City offensive line. And the only other question offensively, and we touched on this some last week, is What do you do at wide receiver three? You're looking to upgrade off of a Nelson Aguilar who didn't give you the same impact in 2023 last season. But besides that, you're plug and play. You're ready to go.
And that for me is, at most, it's a Sammy Watkins type deal, five to six. It's not Odell.
No, you're not taking
it's
a
not
big swing.
Reaching like
yeah. Keenan Allen take five
make
to
a
six.
Value play. I don't know. That'd be a big.
Yeah.
He'd be going way backwards.
Yeah.
But he's had trouble staying healthy.
Yeah.
So who knows? But they need to spend more money on their defense.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And to your point, Bun, I don't see Nelson Aguilar being back.
No,
like,
no.
Yeah, like it just, yeah. Frankly, is Nelson Aguilar playing football next year? Like, I wonder. But yeah, they have tilted for years. This team spent all their money on defense. It's now severely tilted toward the offensive side. And now it's time to put some, because what did we say earlier? They need dudes. They need dudes on defense. And dudes cost money unless you're gonna hit in the draft. And we saw the Eagles hitting the draft this year. Got a couple of dudes on the back end, and they've hit in the draft over the last few years in the first and second round. But unless you hit in the draft, you're gonna have to buy some dudes.
I think that the Ravens need a sure thing, another sure thing. Not a draft pick. They need someone who can beat up Patrick Mahomes like he was getting beat up in this game. They need someone who's done that at the NFL level, to me, if you're going to talk about having the ingredients it takes to potentially beat the Chiefs, not just on a neutral site, because that wouldn't be the case, to beat them in Arrowhead. And then to be able to beat a team like the Eagles or the Lions or the Packers or, you know, whoever gets there on the other side next year.
Yeah, they need to bring in that dude. They need to get Nnamdi Matabike right. They need to get Roquan Smith right. And I think bringing in that third safety is going to be imperative. That way you can have Kyle Hamilton in more of that playmaker role.
Well, if I'm confident in something, they're going to sign a safety. Because that's very
that.
Much on brand. They will now, will it work? We'll see. But they will sign a safety.
I'd like to see him sign a pass rusher. I'd like to see him spend real money and
you
sign
and
a
both.
Real pass rusher that hurts Silent Steve a little bit to stroke that check.
I don't think he's a billionaire. It doesn't hurt him. That's like pocket.
It always
does. That's like me. That's like me hitting the vending machine.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He's got the black wing.
Yeah,
he's got the other stuff.
Yeah, DaCosta's got an unlimited budget. Right?
I just think it doesn't hurt. He's got the when you got
he's
billions.
Got Sashi running interference.
There he is.
Yeah. I was about to say you haven't brought up Sashi.
He's trying to get it in there. Yeah.
Sashi's there to save the money. Let's get all the freebies we can from the government.
Hey,
they got Lamar done.
They
helped out with Lamar.
There was a Super Bowl party at the M&T Bank Stadium yesterday. Cordell Woodland was there. Covers the Ravens. Of course, does shows here at 105.7 The Fan. We'll get his thoughts on the Super Bowl, on the Ravens, and much more. Cordell joins us next here on The Fan.